You're listening to Let's Talk TriDelta, a podcast brought to you by TriDelta. In this podcast, we can dive deeper into some of the most powerful stories from our award-winning magazine, The Trident, and we can get up close and personal with some of our brave, bold, and kind members. Thank you for joining us. Now, let's talk TriDelta.
Hello, and welcome to another episode of Let's Talk TriDelta. Thanks for joining us. I'm Karen White, TriDelta's CEO and editor-in-chief of the Trident magazine. Today, we're recording live from our Lunch and Lead event in Denver, Colorado. Lead is TriDelta's premier leadership development program, created for women by women and designed to develop women in their careers, their families, and their communities. Our Lunch and Lead topic today centers on women unlocking their superpowers in networking and mentorship. We have a panel of dynamic TriDeltas who are also joining us today on Let's Talk TriDelta. I'm excited to introduce Alexandra Weisner as our first guest today. She's an alumna of Northern Arizona University. That's TriDelta's Phi Omicron chapter. She is passionate about sports, fitness, health, and well-being. And she took that passion and launched Brunch Running with her best friend in Denver back in 2013. Brunch Running is one of the top social fitness communities in the country, both online and through live fitness events. Alex, thanks for being with us on Let's Talk TriDelta.
Thank you so much for having me. Excited to be here.
So tell us about yourself. Tell us about your passion for sports and fitness and sort of your background.
Yeah, I got into sports at a very young age. I started dancing at two, but I think that's because my mom thought I couldn't sit still, which was very true and is still true. So I just started playing sports and always lived a very active life, and sports kind of guided everything I've done for the most part of my life. School was always second, I guess.
It's balance.
Played everything. I'd studied ballet for over 10 years and then swam in the summer, played basketball, played soccer, was nonstop. Got into skiing when I was five, and mainly because my dad and another family friend was bored one day and our moms were out shopping, so they didn't know what to do with three young girls. And our dads apparently wanted to go skiing.
So off you went to the
slopes. So they like took us skiing, and then it became a regular thing. And then I really fell in love with the sport in around 98, watching the Olympics and being an athlete. I was like, that looks like fun. I think I could do that. Having no idea what it actually any of the disciplines were, and started ski racing in 99.
Wow.
When I was in seventh grade, just fell in love with the sport and did some winter tutorial programs, and eventually made my way out to Steamboat Springs, Colorado to finish up high school.
That's so outstanding.
It was a lot of fun. Got to travel the world for a little bit and travel the state and just ski on the weekends. And
so super competitive skier you were. Yes. So tell us a little bit about that.
It's really fun. Now I get to ski for fun, which is really nice, and don't have to go out on the really cold days. But it was just a really fun sport. I think for me, sports always, I needed discipline in my life. I was diagnosed with ADD when I was really young and dyslexia. So having discipline and all of that really just helped me focus more and probably tire me out.
Redirect that energy
somewhere else. So skiing was, you know, it's a really fun, exciting sport. Definitely was not the best by any means, but I made some amazing friends, and I love training, and I think I still love training, which is something in my life now. I can't just go for a run. I'm like, what race are we training for, or what event are we doing, and how can I be the best in this sport? Even though now I'm so not competitive. I'm competitive with myself and my business partner. If we see one of us has run further than the other one or before the other one in the mornings, we're like, oh, well, she ran 5 miles. I should run 5 miles today.
That's good. So you have an accountability partner built into your business partner. I love it. So fast forward, where does the concept from brunch running? First of all, I have to tell you, I love both of those things. And the combination of those to me is magical. So tell us about
it. Yeah. So it was basically what we were doing. So I met Courtney, my business partner, through my big sis. Courtney and Jill grew up together in Northern Colorado and were childhood friends. And so I came up to like visit several times, and Courtney and I just like hit it off. We were like, we should be best friends. And so we essentially, that's what happened. we all just continued to be friends. And then we all went to Mexico for Jill's 26th birthday years ago. And we were like, Courtney got off the plane here and was like, thought they forgot me somewhere. I'd gotten off the plane in Arizona and I moved up here 2 weeks later. Cause yeah. I was like, yeah, I need to be back in Colorado. And the three of us at that point had already completed one half marathon together. We were all kind of just running on our own and we decided to go to Vegas for Courtney's husband's birthday, but the half marathon was that weekend. So us girls were like, well, let's run the half marathon because that sounds like a great idea when you go to Vegas. We still had fun and none of us had run a half before. So we made it into a fun weekend. Then I moved up here and we all lived within a 2-block radius of each other. Well, I was on Jill's couch and Courtney lived down the street. So in the mornings or afternoons after work, running became our happy hour. We'd go and just run around Denver City Park or Cheeseman and then either cook dinner at one person's house and like sit there and watch The Bachelor.
Right.
And or Denver at the time had a lot of restaurants that in the evenings they had run clubs. So like on Tuesday nights, we would do like the Wahoo's taco one. So we'd go for a run and then get free tacos and happy hour margaritas. And, you know, we're broke late 20s. Like
perfect.
Free food is great. So we kind of followed that around. And Courtney and I were just like getting into talking. I was looking to make some transitions in my life from doing high tech PR into other things and kind of just getting a little restless sitting at a desk all day long. Just knew that wasn't something for me. And Courtney was also looking at becoming a personal trainer and we were looking at that together. And then we're like joking at some of the races we were running because we were running a race almost every single weekend. We're like, the food sucks at the finish line.
It does. That's so like, true. So true.
We're hungry and you give me a banana that may or may not be ripe. This plain bagel, but nothing to put on it. And like chewy granola bars are great, but like you so need true. A little bit something more. And
you want to reward yourself too. You've just run 13.1 miles. Yeah. You need more than a banana.
Right. You need protein. You need all these things. And there was no celebration around it. We saw so many times where then we would just leave and we weren't the only ones that would like you get through the finish line and there's no community around that. And we're just like,
missed opportunity.
We're like, what's going on here? Right? And so we kind of, I think, went a little backwards at first because we're like, well, we want to do a race and we're talking about doing a race, but we had no idea even how to do a race.
Right. Right. So to organize a race yourself. Right.
We're like, we don't know how to do this. And we were just like sitting there one day and I'm probably a little bit pushy where I was like, all right, we're going to start this. Like we're going to start this run club. I'm going to make us a Facebook page. And then it's like, Courtney, what should we call ourselves? And like we'd gone on a run, the three of us that morning, like we convinced our friends to run with us a lot. We are those people and friends probably hate us at times. Or like, oh, this restaurant's 6 miles away. Let's run up there and get brunch afterwards. And Courtney's husband, I think, either picked us up or we rode bikes home.
Nice.
But she's like, the word runs in the middle of the word brunch. And it's like, that's it. We're calling ourselves brunch running. Like I made us the worst logo ever out of like clip art. And like we made a Facebook page. So it's like, this is how we can get our word out there that we're doing this. And at the time, we didn't have any business structure. We weren't an LLC. We're just like, this is something we want to do to meet other people, especially in the running world where, you know, we were meeting people at races and had friends that ran, but there was no community behind it. So we just started with the Facebook page for the first couple ones. And then I was getting antsy in my job. She was getting ready to apply to law school. And I kind of just made us an LLC one day after talking to some other friends that were starting a company and then started building out our website like on the weekends.
Yeah.
And in April of 2013, we officially launched and did our first event here in Denver. We knew that from the reason for selecting brunch and the restaurants we were working with were brunch restaurants tend to open earlier. So they're open at 8, 9, or 10 in the morning, sure. But that brunch crowd doesn't show up till 11.
Right.
So they're basically just sitting empty for that first hour, 2 hours they're open. And we knew as runners, we were up early in the morning. We were at most restaurants. We were the first people there. And so we knew some local restaurant owners and just kind of pitched them the idea. And in its first iteration of brunch, it was all ticketed events.
Right.
So you purchase your ticket, you'd get your run, entree, 2 drinks, tax gratuity. And then we did a donation to a local nonprofit.
Very nice.
So it's this nice little package. And we had a lot of fun with it. We got a some great local recognition. But that first summer, we tried to do an event at a different restaurant every single weekend.
Oh, my. Oh, my gosh.
Because we were like, well, we don't want people to get bored running the same route like every single week.
Yeah.
And that we're like, but we probably put a lot more work on our plate for that. And but the response we got was amazing. People were like, this is so cool. Like, I've been looking for a community. Like, and some of our events were starting to sell out. And a lot of our friends down in Phoenix were also seeing what we were doing up here. So we launched Phoenix, I think, in 2014.
So, yeah, within a year.
Within a year or two of opening or starting in Denver, just because we saw, like, people want community. And as an adult, how do you make friends?
Right.
Because in the go to work. Right. And now people work from home. So, like, you don't even go to work to make friends anymore. So we were just like, well, we want to make other like-minded people that like to work out, that want to go to brunch. And everything has always been focusing more on that social side. We don't care how fast you run. You can walk. You bring your dog. You can bring your kid.
Right.
And push a stroller. Like, just show up.
So super inclusive. Bring you.
Bring you. And, you know, we are also seeing that the running industry was really intimidating. There were the, like, really competitive run clubs and running groups. And we talked to people like, well, I went to this one running group and I don't run a 6 minute mile. So when I got back to the start where we were all supposed to meet before driving over to the restaurant, no one was there. And we were like, well, that's kind of like intimidating. Then you show up and everyone's already kind of like ingrained into what's going on. And so with us, no matter what, you show up, we're starting and finishing at that restaurant. Everyone is still there. Like, we're all hanging out for hours on end most of the time.
Nice.
So you really get that sense of the community. And we really focus on becoming a resource for everything you need in your fitness life. So we work with local gyms. Studios, we work with local running stores, we work with shoe brands like Brooks, who then, you know, show up and do demos so you can kind of get everything you need there and get to meet some really awesome people. We've made some awesome friends.
So innovative. All right. So what advice would you give to younger, you know, our younger Tri-Delta sisters as they're thinking about life after college and they're thinking about what their careers are going to hold? What kind of wisdom would you share?
I think just put yourself out there. I know it's easier said than done. And whether you're looking for a job, if you're looking for a job in a specific industry, there's so many groups and meetups that you can just put yourself out there. Look at your professional girl crushes on Instagram, see what they're doing. And find ways, like, if they own a yoga studio and you really want to get into like yoga and doing marketing for a yoga company, you know, see if there's opportunities to volunteer at the studio or get involved in their events or show up to classes and little things like that. Because sometimes, you know, I think you can apply for a job, but until you're a face to a company, it's a lot harder to, you know, put two and two together and be like, oh, I really like this person. Because some people look great on paper. Some people, it takes some time to get to know them. And you might look great on paper too, but just adding in those additional things. So if you want to get into the event space, volunteer at events. If you, I think volunteering for a variety of different organizations within your professional network is a great way to get your foot in the door. I worked in, I've done PR for a lot of craft breweries and festivals here in town. And the way to, I got to know a lot of people and recommend to other people was just come out and volunteer at an event. Yeah, it's not so sexy to, be loading and helping chefs load in food, but then you're getting to know those restaurants, you're getting to know those people, and that's what it's all about. So just take any opportunity you find to get to know people.
Yeah.
And even on social media, don't be afraid to reach out to people. It might sometimes take a little bit longer, but develop that relationship. Because I mean, there's professional girl crushes I have with like other business owners. I'm like, I've never met them. They don't live in Colorado, but I follow their stories. I read the articles that they're in.
Yeah.
And I see the journey they're going on. And, you know, we sometimes will just chat back and forth because we're going through similar things.
Sure.
And sometimes there might be something that they can help us with and that we can help them with. So just being able to do that. And I think that's the biggest thing too, is be a resource to the people you're reaching out to.
Right.
If you can see that a brand or whomever could do something better and you think you can do that, don't be afraid to tell them that you think you can help them be better.
Yeah.
Because I think, I mean, that's a question I always ask during interviews.
Right.
We haven't really hired anyone yet, but for my other company, it's always a question like, how can you help me be better?
Right.
What what value do you add to this? Because, I mean, just because you own the company or your boss is there doesn't mean you can't manage up and help succeed. And I think a lot of times women are always scared about that.
Yeah.
There's been some terms definitely thrown out over the years where people are like, you're bossy or this and that. And right. I think that's not what it is. Like, if a company and the structure's there and the foundation's there, your bosses or anyone else will appreciate you managing up and helping them out, because the overall success of the company is the goal. Like, yeah. Don't care how we get there. We like to hire people smarter than us and talk to people that are smarter than us.
So tell our listeners where they can find out more about Brunch Running.
So we're Brunch Running basically everywhere. So our website's brunchrunning.com. We are Brunch Running on Instagram, along with, if you want to come out for our race, it's the Brunch Run on Instagram. And then we're launching a new race next year. We don't have too many details on it yet, but the Instagram's the Mimosa Mile. So that will give you kind of an idea of where we're going. But yeah, we're very active on Instagram. That's definitely kind of more of our home place. We do Facebook, post there occasionally, but our website and Instagram are the best places to follow us.
That's perfect. Well, thank you so much for being with us. We are so excited that, A, we got to meet you, and that you're going to share such great wisdom with our Lunch and Lead panel today. So thank you so much.
Thank you for having me.
And now we're joined by Brittany Morris Saunders, a Theta Beta Tri Delta from the University of Colorado in Boulder, just up the street here. Brittany is the head of the Local Affairs Division at Siebold Hanfling here in Denver. She's been involved in Colorado and Denver politics for over 20 years, which is amazing because I can't believe you had 20 years worth of any kind of experience. She's so young and beautiful, but lots of experience in both the private and public sector here in Colorado. I know you enjoy working on projects and initiatives that positively affect the lives of individuals, especially here in the city of Denver. We're just so excited to have you. Welcome to Let's Talk Tri-Delta.
Thank you. I'm so happy to be here.
So tell us a little bit about yourself and your position here in Denver.
All right. Thank you. I have lived in Colorado my entire life. I was born and raised in Denver and took a brief 4 years out of living here in Denver and went up to CU Boulder. Yeah. And I've always known I wanted to be involved in politics since I was a little girl. I went to fundraisers with my dad and got very involved in presidential politics, actually, at a very young age.
Nice.
And just knew this was the space that I wanted to be in. So when I went to CU Boulder, I studied political science and was very involved in Tri-Delta sorority government, as well as student government. I ran for CU student body president my senior year, which is at the same time that I was the collegiate president for Tri-Delta.
Oh my. So those are a few things.
So I'm a glutton for punishment, but I did that. And I actually ran, for CU, you do tri-exec. So you run with a ticket of three, and we were the only all-female ticket that ran, and we were the only all Tri-Delta ticket.
Oh my. Well, you know what? We love threes in
yes,
Tri-Delta.
Yes, exactly. And unfortunately, we did not win, but the team who won ended up hiring me as their PR director. So that was, it was an amazing experience, because at the same time that I was the collegiate president running, you know, the sorority and standards, et cetera, I also had a weekly op-ed in the Colorado Daily newspaper in Boulder.
Wow.
So it really, both sorority as well as student government really gave me that foundation for the next step in my life, which was the beginning of my career. I was very fortunate to get a job 5 days after I graduated CU.
Wow.
Which was amazing.
That is amazing.
And I started in political consulting. I worked my way up very quickly at another consulting firm and was the youngest senior vice president of the company at age 26.
Oh my.
So I was there for about 6.5 years, and we worked on major projects that impacted Denver and throughout the state of Colorado. We represented developers and businesses, nonprofits.
So exciting.
Yeah, it was awesome. It was graduate school for me, but again, me being a glutton for punishment, I also went to grad school on the side. Yeah. Yeah. And I was able to complete at the University of Colorado at Denver a master's in political science.
kids. So I did that at the same time. And public service and public sector was definitely calling me. And after 6.5 years at this political consulting firm, I became the head of economic development for a small city just north of Denver called Commerce City. And I became the head of economic development in November of 2008, which, as many of you know, it was the end of the world.
Sure,
and
it was.
Not a great
Everything
time.
Changed.
Yes, right. Not a great time to be the head of economic development for a city.
Our last guest talked about that too.
Good.
She came out of school in 2007, mm-hmm. just ahead of the recession. Oh. And I don't know that some of our younger listeners may not realize the challenges, right, of launching your career during that time. Right. Certainly our more seasoned listeners would recognize the challenges at the time, right?
Right.
So how did that play out for you?
It was surprising. I think having, I started work in May of 2002, so we were just coming out of the 2001 recession.
Sure.
And I knew nothing other than successful businesses, developers. I was working on a project that was going to cost $1 billion, and everyone talked like, well, we just get the money and
right.
this is what's
sure.
going to happen. And so I do remember the moment that I took the job. I actually interviewed for the job 2 days after Barack Obama was elected president. Mm-hmm. And then a couple of days after that, my husband, my then boyfriend, but now husband, and I were out for pizza, you know, celebrating, and we're watching the stock market just
sure.
drop and drop and drop, and thinking to ourselves, because we didn't really live through it in a professional
sure.
setting.
You were young. Yeah.
We had no way to prepare. And we said, I think that's bad.
Right,
and so
right.
I think this is really bad. But we really did not know what to expect. I will say, being in government, it was the best place for me to be. I was considering a couple of different job changes at the time. And to be in the public sector at sure. that time, we were talking about stimulus funds for public projects sure. and infrastructure needs in our community. So that was an amazing lesson. We also strategically planned. So I was the person who passed the first strategic economic development strategic plan in the city's history. Commerce City is a pretty
yeah.
young city.
Yeah.
So that was really fun. And then things started to tick back up and yeah. things got really exciting. I was able to go out to Opryland in Nashville and try to get the Gaylord to build a hotel in
Which
Denver.
Which you were clearly successful in.
We were successful at bringing them to Colorado.
Property.
We unfortunately were not successful in bringing them to Commerce City. They ended up in Aurora, but
well, they did. True.
They ended up here, which
yeah.
is the big win. And that was, you know, due in part to our visits out there to meet
nice.
With the CEO, which was really fun. And then after a few years there, I was missing Denver, and we had just had an election where a new mayor was elected, and I became the head of public policy and economic development for the Downtown Denver Partnership. And this is the civic organization that handles economic development, public policy, placemaking
sure.
for downtown Denver. And it's one of the largest downtown organizations in the country. And I was there for 5 years and worked on some pretty substantial pieces of policy. The camping ban, which is one of the most controversial
sure.
policies I've ever worked on, because we had a huge issue with homeless individuals sleeping on the 16th
sure.
Street Mall.
Sure.
And it wasn't safe for the individuals sleeping. It wasn't safe for residents and businesses and visitors. So coming up with that policy and then working with the city council and the mayor was incredibly difficult.
Yeah.
It was
what
one
a great
of the,
career
yeah.
opportunity, though. Right. As you're learning
Absolutely.
And growing and developing.
Yep.
So talk to us about how networking mm-hmm. And even mentorship have played a part in your career.
Definitely. Well, it's played a major part in my career. And I have been very fortunate. I've worked for four incredibly strong bosses. Mm-hmm. So I learned from the best. My first boss, Maria Garcia Berry, she is a force to be reckoned with. She's she is Cuban by birth.
Yeah.
She came over to this country with the Peter Pan flight,
oh, sure.
which means she came here without her parents,
right?
Because of Fidel Castro,
sure.
And the revolution. And when she got here, they ended up moving to Colorado. And at a very young age, her father had a very successful job in Cuba. When he came here, he was a janitor.
Right.
And so at a very young age, she learned a lot of tough lessons, and she actually started lobbying at the age of 18. and working for then Governor Lamb. So she was an amazing person to learn from. She taught me that it doesn't matter what age you are. When I started at 22, she goes, "You're a lobbyist, go do this."
Right.
And I didn't know what I was doing, but I went out and did it. So
that's awesome. It's incredible to have somebody that will just sort of push you a bit and sort of leverage your fearlessness at the age of 22.
Definitely.
Right? And make it okay for you to go out.
Right. Right. And I do think it does take a special kind of person to be in that setting at that young of age. But I think if you see that spark or see that, what's the word I'm looking for?
The drive or the drive,
ambition. Yeah. The ambition and the grit. Absolutely.
It takes a lot of grit.
In somebody young, especially women, you should empower them and promote them and bring them to meetings with you, because the only way that I learned was seeing her interact and the way that she would come into a meeting with all of these men in real estate and development, right. And she would lead the entire meeting. Hold and now, own. You know, 20 years later, I'm the one who's doing that. Yeah. So I've had incredible mentors in my life.
That's awesome. And so sometimes mentors appear and it's organic, right? Mm-hmm. Have you ever sought out a mentor just sort of intentionally? And what were you looking for in that time?
I don't know if I was intentionally seeking out a mentor, but I have always had people. I seek a lot of feedback in my professional career. And because I am ambitious, I do go to a number of different people in my circle to say, "Hey, should I be doing this?" Especially when I'm considering a career move or something significant in my career. And I will say these people range from, my former bosses. So I would consider Maria a mentor, to even somebody who's younger than me.
Mentor.
Yes.
It's one of my favorite
things.
Right.
My first intern ever when I was at CRL, my first job. He was only, 4 years younger than me, but I could tell something was very special with him. And he even then was mentoring me through my career steps. Right. And now, 20 years later, he's a very successful attorney in the Boston area. And I still call him every major decision.
Yeah.
He's just a great
sounding
person
board. Yeah.
To bounce things off.
That's incredible. That's incredible. Mm-hmm. Do you have any career missteps? Right? Career mistakes that you've learned from, right? That you'd want to share with our audience.
I think the biggest lesson learned, and I make mistakes even now. I made a mistake a couple weeks ago. And I think that's one thing you learn is that you constantly are learning in the workforce and you constantly make mistakes and you constantly have successes. And that's what makes it fun. Work is supposed to be fun.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, we spend a lot of time doing it.
We spend lot of time doing it. So you better enjoy it.
Right.
But those are tough times, but you definitely learn from them. And I, crazy as it sounds, enjoy those moments. But I will say the biggest thing that I have learned is, especially for women, that we need to have confidence in ourselves and to take risks because I have been very fortunate and up for some pretty significant jobs. I have found myself making excuses as to why I don't deserve that job.
And the inner critic.
Yeah, exactly. And a few months after I gave birth, my second boy, I was called and I was asked to apply for the chief of staff to the mayor of Denver. And I remember in my head thinking, well, there's no way they're going to give me that. I have a young child.
Interesting.
I'll go through the process, but there's no way I'm going to get it. And even my dad was like,
"Yeah,
you're not going to get this. There's no way. Like, you're too young. You're 36 years old. There's no way." And I convinced myself like there was no way I was going to get it. And I ultimately did not. But I think it's important, again, especially for women in the workforce, that just go for it. Don't be your own worst critic.
Right.
Say it doesn't matter if you have a 3-month-old at home and that this is going to be really tough. Guys are not saying this.
Right.
You They're just not. Need to go for it. So I would say those are the hardest lessons learned that I've gone through.
Yeah. And that was really my next question is what advice you'd give to young women, mm-hmm. right? Is, you know, some of that is, you know, don't get in your own way, right?
Yeah.
And some of it's a little ritualistic. I mean, I hate to write the perfect confidence in yourself.
Right.
Right. So say more about that.
The biggest advice that I would give any young professional that wants to climb the ladder and wants to achieve their career goals is get involved in the community. And I think especially for Tri-Deltas, like I mentioned, when I was in college, yes, I went to college and I loved that. But I also was very involved in the sorority, in student government, and also having a job. And I think the best way to reach your professional goals is to get involved in the community, whether that's volunteering for a nonprofit that you're really passionate about or serving on boards and commissions for the city or the state, because the people you meet, those relationships are invaluable and they're almost more valuable than your actual job, because that is going to connect you to the things that and how you move up the ladder.
That is amazing. And again, our first guest, founder of Brunch Running, lots of the same advice about putting yourself out there and volunteering and immersing yourself in community and opportunities and in some cases brands, right? To really understand and grow your learning and understanding of what it is you think you may want to do with your life. So thank you so much for being here. I am so excited for the insight and the wisdom you're going to share with our attendees today at Lunch and Lead. I so appreciate you joining Let's Talk Tri-Delta. So thank you.
Of course. Thank you so much. And thank you for being in Denver.
Absolutely. Our third and final guest today is Allison Griffin, an alumna of Theta Kappa Chapter at Southern Methodist University in Dallas, Texas. Allison has spent her career working at the intersection of education and employment, policy and practice. She currently serves as the Senior Vice President at Whiteboard Advisors, a social impact agency that helps its clients navigate the complexities of policy, the media, and technology. She's also a regular contributor to Forbes magazine and, full disclosure, a dear friend of mine. Allison, welcome to Let's Talk Tri-Delta.
Thank you, Karen, for having me. It's great to be with Tri-Deltas in Denver today and to join you on the podcast.
Well, and we appreciate you being a panelist today for Lunch and Lead. So let's get into it.
Great.
Your career has spanned government, education, public policy. How have you found success in these fields through networking and mentorship?
So, you know, I was actually reflecting on my longevity in both my career, but also in forging connections with other people. And one of the things that I was reminded of during that thought process was my dad. When I was really young, his initial advice to me was, be nice to everyone because you never know when you're going to see them again.
So true.
I think that advice, even as a young person, has helped me navigate my own career and connecting with people professionally, personally, and ultimately has put me in the position of being able to bring together people and ideas. And so you touched on a couple of different places where my career has taken me,
sure.
You know, government, education, public policy. A lot of those fields are people driven,
sure,
right? And relationship driven. And so when I think to that, you know, my career path, I think about the number of people that I've interacted with. And I've always been able to learn something from someone else along the way. And I've always been able to take that relationship and figure out how to connect that person to someone else in my network. And so while that doesn't necessarily touch directly on mentoring, I do think the idea of connecting with people based on what they're interested in and finding connections between those interests has been really helpful as I've navigated.
And you're a natural connector. I mean, that's the one thing that having worked with you, right, in Tri-Delta, your ability to step back and see how people connect around larger issues, right, in a broader landscape, it really is your superpower. So I love that you're here with us today.
Thank you.
Talk to me, though, about networking as women. Mm-hmm. You know, we do it a little differently than men. Some might argue we're not as intentional about it. So what are your observations about men and women and networking?
I would actually say I might disagree with you about the intentionality. I actually think women are far more relational.
Yeah.
And I think, however, that that gets translated in a more to a negative than a positive. I think sometimes there's a perception that because women are more relational, that maybe they tend to spend more time in the interpersonal dynamics and all of the extra, right, that comes along with managing relationships. But I actually think that women, if they were reminded that ability to be relational serves them really well, especially in a professional setting.
Sure.
And thinking about how to nurture relationships and listen and take care in how they steward and build connections. And I think in my experience, getting to know someone beyond what they do, but more about who they are and what their passions are. I'll share just a small anecdote. I spent the early part of my career in Washington, D.C.
Sure.
And the first thing that people would ask in Washington is, oh, what do you do? And naturally, you respond with what your job title is, who you work for, what policy you're trying to influence. Well, about 10 years ago, I relocated to Colorado.
Right.
And someone says, what do you do? And I immediately responded with what I did professionally.
Right.
And they wanted to know what I like to do on the weekends. What kind of sport? Do you snow? Do you bike? Do you hike? Right. And so I share that because I think there's an assumption that when we're networking, that we're doing that on the basis of maybe what we do professionally.
Right.
And I think if we, as women, dial it back and think about what do we do in building relationship with others and where are those connecting points around values and interests, I think we're actually far better networkers than men in most cases.
Yeah, that's so amazing that you say that, because our first guest today, Alex Wisner, right, who founded this community and this movement called Brunch Running, was about networking through common interests, right? And it's brought together women, right, and men, but from all walks of life. Mm-hmm. But the entree point there wasn't what we do professionally,
right?
So that's such an important distinction to make. All right, so talk a little bit about mentorship, right? I know that you are an amazing mentor to others.
Thank you.
I know you've had some really terrific mentors in your life. Mm-hmm. So talk to us a bit about what you think is important about finding a mentor and then being a mentor.
Yes. So I'm going to start actually with being a mentor instead of finding a mentor, because I think there is a presumption or assumption that there's certain things you have to do or be or have to be a mentor. And I'd like to dismiss some of those assumptions, because I think that anyone can be a mentor.
Yeah.
I think the first thing you have to do is make yourself available to someone else.
Yeah.
And quite frankly, that's probably the hardest thing to do.
Yeah.
In developing a mentor relationship is putting yourself out there.
Right.
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 Either saying, I'm available, I'm interested, I'd love to connect with you, or on the reverse, someone seeking a mentor to put yourself out there and say, I really need help in this area. I'd like to learn more.
Right.
And so when I think about mentorship, I think about as someone who's benefited from a lot of great mentors in my life, I think about the people who have come forward to me to say, I see something in you.
Yeah.
I'd like to learn more about that passion area, or I'd like to come alongside you and see how this idea that you have develops.
Right.
And so it's identifying in someone else.
Sure.
That passion or that interest or that alignment. And quite frankly, putting yourself out there to come alongside that person.
Sometimes I refer to it as it.
Hmm.
Somebody's got it.
Hmm.
And sometimes you can't put your finger on it, right? It's a spark. It's an ambition. It's a drive. Last interview, we talked about grit. Oh. There's something special about someone that you can't necessarily define, but it's somebody that you know you'd be willing to show up for, right? Invest time in and with, right? And so as a mentor, right, to find those people, It really makes you grateful to have been mentored by someone who found that in you.
In you. Absolutely.
Right.
I think so. And I think, you know, this is very tactical, but you know, when you initially connect with someone mm-hmm. who either you would like to mentor or the other person, sure. you know, yeah. sees a possibility in a mentor relationship with you, I think it's actually being really candid about what you're looking for. Yeah. And sometimes those are the hardest conversations to have, right? To
yeah.
either put yourself out there and ask for something, or to, as a mentor, perhaps even putting some pretty clear parameters around the nature of that relationship.
Sure.
And I bring that up because I think back to a couple of experiences that I've had where people have mentored me, and they've been very direct and very clear about where they're able to help and
sure.
how they're able to mentor.
Sure.
And that actually helped me to be very clear about what that relationship was going to be like.
Right.
And even in those types of conversations, you know, they've been able to suggest other people who I
right.
might then also be able to
right.
bring into a mentoring relationship. And quite frankly, that has translated for me into the development of like a personal board of directors.
So I love this concept, right? I had a similar experience. My mentor turned me on to another mentor,
mm-hmm.
right?
Yes.
So she had taken me to a place where she felt like there was another opportunity for me to work with someone else, right? So mm-hmm. that's amazing.
Yes.
Right?
Yes.
But so talk to me about the concept of a personal board of directors. I'm fascinated by that.
Absolutely. So I'll share just a little bit about my own personal board of directors.
Yeah.
So I have five people because you need an odd number.
Yes, you do.
Because you don't want everyone coming to an agreement with that even count. But I have five people across my personal and professional life who are very clear about what it is I'm trying to accomplish personally and professionally. They have helped me refine my personal and professional goals. I talk to them collectively once a year.
You do?
Yes.
You bring them together.
I bring them together.
So you have a board meeting.
I have a board meeting.
I love it.
Yes. I interact with each of the five of them separately throughout the year, depending on what it is we're
sure.
talking about. But they've helped me to refine my goals, set my sights on some professional activities, some personal interests, and they have been direct. And that's why I go back to what I said about that mentor relationship. When you
right.
can be really clear and direct with people, it's helped me to actually have those five people give me some very candid feedback and very direct advice.
It's amazing.
Not something that you always get, perhaps from an employer or
sure.
a parent or a friend.
Right.
But you know, people who are invested in you, just the same as a board would be invested in an organization.
So, you know, our listeners span five generations. We
sure.
have five generations in TriDelta right now. Mm-hmm. But a lot of younger listeners, what advice would you give, right, to new or recent college grads about how to get going in mm-hmm. the world, how to launch?
Sure. Well, I think we've touched on this a little bit, you know, being your authentic self,
yeah.
right, showing up. Presenting who you are, you might have to be a little vulnerable,
yeah.
right?
Yeah.
But I think acknowledging that, you know, this is the first time that I've called someone and asked for an informational interview, but I've read so much about you
right.
and I'd be interested in learning more about your career or your interests or how you manage family and work, right? Whatever the question might be. I think, you know, take a deep breath.
Yeah.
You know? Pick up the phone or write that email or
right.
write that personal note. But putting yourself out there because we've all done it. And I think when, at least for me, when I'm on the receiving end
yes.
of a note or an outreach or, you know, or a phone call and someone says to me, this is the first time I've reached out or I have a question. I'm not sure how to answer it. Would you be willing to give me 15, 30 minutes of your time? Always say yes.
I do too. It's, to me, it's an honor.
Yes.
Right? Because you can think back and remember how hard it was and scary, right?
Absolutely.
To be that person
Absolutely.
Early in your career.
Yes, I would agree. So I know it takes, you know, like I said, take a deep breath, but like it takes a little bit of guts to do that. But I think that the relationship starts there with that authentic connection and has
yeah.
the opportunity to grow when you're vulnerable and share a little bit about yourself.
So I'm going to ask you a question because I know a lot about your career and I know about your passion for launching women and that your passion around bridging that connection, right, from college to career.
Yes.
You know, TriDelta's recently launched our Life After College series, right?
Yes.
And that will be a program that will be continuously improved, but it does include this opportunity for women to connect across a virtual platform, right? And raise their hands to be mentors or find a mentor, raise their hand to give informational interviews. Or so just tell me what your thoughts are on those important, that the important things that need to happen to bridge that challenging transition.
So bridging the transition from college to career.
Yep.
Gosh, what a busy time.
Yeah.
For, especially for our, I'm going to say, you know, traditional age college women.
Right.
But actually the new, you know, today's student, you know, is older.
Sure.
Managing family and work and all kinds of demands
balancing
on their time.
Sure.
Right. But I think for right now, the, you know, traditional TriDelta.
Right.
A collegiate member. It is a busy time.
Mm-hmm.
And it is hard to figure out how to make that transition from school to work, education to employment, as I like to say.
Yeah.
I go back to something that I mentioned earlier, or, you know, referenced earlier, you know, you're not alone. You're not
right.
The only one
true.
Who is doing this.
Right.
And so I think, you know, finding connection with other women who are also making that transition, whether they're women in your chapter or women in your city or
sure.
women in your industry, and even figuring out how do you forge those connections and make that transition together,
right?
Even, and you know, there may be some opportunity to connect together with a group of women who are in the industry or in an interest area who
right.
are already out of school,
right?
Right? How great would it be to bring three or four recent graduates
right.
together with three or four alumni
right.
who are either all in the same industry or have the same passion and talk through some of those challenges. Now, you know, that's a fairly tactical suggestion, but I think for me, it goes back to the fact that we all are seeking
yep.
some degree of connection with each other.
Sure.
And I think to what you said, you know, being honored when someone asks.
No. Right. I know.
To get together. So I guess my advice to soon to be
yes.
college graduates is to take a chance
yeah.
and to pick
yeah.
up the phone or to reach out. And whether it's through TriDelta's platform
sure.
Or through other organizations that you might be a part. We're standing by.
Yeah.
To be honest,
yeah.
I mean, as a alumni member, I'm here in Denver. You know, I'm standing by to connect with new TriDeltas who are coming or TriDeltas who are newly arriving in town.
Well, I have got to tell you, that is going to make a lot of people on this listening to this podcast right now very happy, right? Very happy. So, Allison, thank you for being
You're
with
so
us
welcome.
Today. Thank you for sharing your insight and your wisdom, your learnings. With the attendees here at Lunch and Lane. It's just so good
yeah.
to see you. So
Great
thank
to
you
see
for talking
you.
TriDelta with me.
Thank you.